Okay, yeah, so we're going to get started now. We're holding on Lamed Hey Amud Beis, four lines from the bottom. Talking about the things, we're still on the subject of the Esrog, which things make it possible. The Mishnah had said, Nitla Pitmasa, that the Pitma of it was removed. A ton of Rabbi Yitzchak Ben Elazar, Torah Brice on that, Nitla Buchnasa, that the buchna of it was taken off. Now the buchna, Rashi explains, the word buchna literally means like a pestle, like a stick that you use, like a stick that you use in a mortar to pound things, like to pound spices or whatever. So a stick that goes into a socket. It's called a buchna in Aramaic. So what does that mean? So Rashi says that Rashi prefers the explanation like this, that the pit that we're talking over here about the pitum on the top of the ester, and what we mean is, if you look at the pitum, how it attaches to the ester, if the pitum is taken off the top of the ester, what you have left there is a hole. So therefore, the end of the pitum going into that hole is like a mortar, is like a pestle, like a buchna going into a mortar. So what we're saying is, if the pitum is removed to the extent that it's removed for the buchna, that you actually have a hole left over there, that's what we're talking about. The esrog would be possible, as opposed to if just, for example, a little bit of the pitum was missing, then that wouldn't make it possible. Then Rashi brings another explanation, which is the Mishnah had mentioned, besides nitla pitmasa, the Mishnah had also mentioned later on that it's kosher if nitla uktzai, that if the uketz was removed. Now, the simple meaning, again, Rashi says, is that pitmasai, which we're saying is possible, is the pitim on the top of the esrog, and what makes it kosher is if the uketz on the bottom of it is removed. So Rashi says like this, within the uketz itself, you can distinguish between, if you look at the uketz, it's the stem of the esrog that it was attached to on the tree, that it was attached to the tree branch from. If you think of it, on an esrog, as in many other fruits, you have the part of that that actually sticks into the body of the esrog. If you pull it off, then you'll actually have a hole left over there. And then you have like the crown-like thing around it, the round thing around it, which is outside the body of the esrog. Rashi says that Rashi brings from one of his teachers, Rabbi Yitzchak Halevi, that the pitma that we're saying is possible, makes it possible, is that's the buchna, that's the part that actually goes into the esrog and would leave a hole if you took it out, whereas the uket that makes it kosher if you remove it is the area around that. And therefore, according to that explanation, there wouldn't be an issue with what we call pitum falling off at all. The issue would only be both pitum and uket would be on the bottom of the esrog. Again, the uket would be the actual stem itself, And the pitum would be the actual stem itself, and the uketz would be like the little crown-shaped thing around it.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So that's when you actually have a hole, right? As opposed to you have the little crown-shaped thing, which is what it used to be, the leaves that covered the petals when the esrog flower was small. So that would be okay. Rashi says, I don't like that explanation because. How do you come to the word pitum, meaning the stem, meaning the uketz? Pitum means what we think of as a pitum. So Tosfos brings another possibility that yes, you do actually find there's a Mishnah and a Gemara and Nida in a completely different context in Halacha that talk about where you have pitum and uketz both referring to the same area. And therefore, yes, they say that, yeah, what the Gemara is saying over here is indeed if the pitum is removed, what we think of as the pitum, it's possible. If the uketz, meaning, in other words, within the pitum itself, you have then two things. You have if the pitum is removed as a whole, or if the oikets is removed in the sense that you have indeed a hole left at the top of the esrog.
But it's only for you the hole.
No, so actually, sorry, let me rephrase that. What Tosfos says is if you look at the system of an esrog, if you don't mind putting yourself on mute, we hear a lot of background noise there. Thanks.
Okay, one second.
Thank you. If you look carefully at the pitum of an esrog, there's a part of it that goes vertical from the top of the esrog, and then on the top of it there's a little like a button.
Yes.
In halacha, that button is called the sheshanta. So Tosfos brings the possibility then that Pitmasai means the Shoshanta, and Uchtzai means and Uchtzai means the body of the pit. No, it means the body of the pit.
Ah.
Yes.
So
in Shulchan Aruch it brings all these different possibilities. So Shulchan Aruch it says like this. And then Tosfos says, according to that, when Rabbi Yitzchok ben Elazar is saying Nitla Buchnasai, he's not explaining what the Mishnah means. Like Rashi says that he's explaining what the Mishnah means, that it means that the Uketz or the Pitim is removed to the extent that there's a hole in the Esrog. Rather, he's giving another case when the Esrog is possible. Namely, if the Uketz, if the stem on the bottom of the Esrog is removed to the extent that you have a hole in the body of the Esrog, the concavity over there where the stem is stuck into the Esrog, then it's also possible. So in other words, it comes out according to that. You have three different things. You have if the Shashanta is broken off, if the pitum, the little button on the top, if the pitum, the whole pitum is missing
on the top,
and if the uketz on the bottom is missing, is taken out completely to the extent that there's a hole now in the esrog, like that. Yeah.
But you need just one of those.
One or the other of those. But in other words, the only case when the Mishnah is saying according to that nitzel uketzah is kosher, it would mean that the stem is cut off, but you still have the it's cut off, let's say, flush with the esrog. But you still have the whole hole over there on the bottom that it goes into is covered up. There's nothing missing over there.
I see. The whole kit is missing, but not the hole under the
big oket. Yeah. In Shulchan Aruch, it brings all these different possibilities, and it says, you know, so far as the pitim being missing, that's an outright psul. The shashan...
Without the hole. With the hole.
The pitim on the top being... On the top. Complete pitim being missing. So if it falls off while the esrog is growing, that's different. The typical yanavar esrogim that we use lose their pitim still while they're growing at some early stage. So that's fine. We're talking about if it falls off after it matured, which is why people who buy esrogim with pitim need to be very careful with them. I've actually read that they discovered a decade or two ago essentially a plant vitamin that they could apply to esrog trees to cause them like this. Like I said, a lot of esrog trees, especially yanavar esrogim, lose their pitimum while they're growing, and a lot of people don't like them for that reason, because even though on one hand it means you don't have to worry about the pitim falling off, on the other hand people figure that an esrog with a pitim is nicer. So they've found some kind of essentially a plant vitamin that they can apply to the esrog while it's growing that allows the pitum to stay on more firmly. So that way it stays on while it's growing. Anyway, if the pitum falls off after the esrog has reached a certain maturity, then that's possible. If only the shashanta has fallen off, then because to satisfy Tosfos' opinion, if you have another esrog available, then you should take that. But if you have a choice, it says in Shulchan Aruch, if you have a choice between one really nice esrog, like that doesn't have any spots on it or whatever, but has a shashanta broken off, the little button on the top, versus another one that has a shashanta but isn't as nice, then fine, go ahead and take the nicer one, because not necessarily is the halacha like Tosfos in that regard. And as far as the uketz on the bottom, the halacha is that, yeah, you know, the uketz can be cut off flush with the esrog, as long as the hole is completely filled. If the hole that it fills up at the bottom of the esrog is partially or completely uncovered, then, yeah, the esrog is possible.
And it's still called mevudar even though the hole is covered.
As long as the hole is covered, that's what we're saying. It's called, yeah. Then the Mishnah said niklaf, that if the esrog was peeled, we said it's possible. Amar Rava, hai esroga, the iglid kahina sumka, an esrog that was peeled like a red date, kshera, is kosher. Meaning, again, we said yesterday, peeling in, you know, the peel in Gemara terminology is what they call nowadays the zeth, the very outer layer of the esrog. Now, typically, you know how when you peel, for example, apples or whatever, and you leave them out for a while, they turn brown. An esrog, the same thing would happen. If you peel it and leave it for a while, it'll start turning brown. That's what we're describing over here. If you peel the esrog and it becomes like a reddish, brownish date, then it's still kosher. I said, what do you mean? Well, not non-lichva fossil. The Mishnah had said that if you peel the esrog, it's possible. The answer is like kasha, habakula habamiksasa. One's talking about if the whole esrog was peeled, the other one if part of it was peeled. Now, what do we mean by a whole or a part? Rashi says it means if the whole esrog is peeled, then it's kosher, because then it all has one uniform color. That's what we're explaining to explain what Rava is saying, how it fits with the Mishnah, is that if the Mishnah is saying it's possible if part of it is peeled, Because then part of it is one color, part of it is another color, part of it is still yellow, part of it is turning brown. Therefore, it's possible. It looks manuma, or it looks like spotted. And we said the other day that spotted is no good in an ester.
It's part of it.
One second. That's according to Rashi. Whereas if the whole thing is peeled, that's what Rava is saying, the whole thing becomes brownish like a date, then it's fine. Most other Rishonim learn the other way around. They say that no. It's the other way around. The Mishnah is talking about when is it possible if the whole thing was peeled. What's Rava talking about if part of it was peeled and it still has some of its peel left? Why? Because the Gemara is going to explain soon that in some ways we consider an esrog to be like an animal as far as Hilchos Treifos. Just like there's certain things that make an animal treifa, so there are things that make an esrog possible. One of those things that makes an animal treifa is if it loses all its skin. Either someone partially skinned it, which would be a very cruel thing to do, or it lost its skin, let's say because of disease or whatever. The halacha is unless it has a certain amount of its skin left, and there's those details in halacha how much it has to have left, if it has some of its skin left, then eventually its skin will regrow, and therefore it's okay. But if all its skin is gone, it's treif. By the same token, over here, what we're saying is if all of the peel of the esrog is gone, all of the zest of the esrog, then it's possible. If some of it is missing, if some of it is missing, and then there's the machlokes are showing him how much of it needs to be left, That's the thing. Because according to those mepharshim, they take the view like this. The Rif, I think, says that way, the Rambam, the Rosh, most of Rishonim look that way.
View of Rava, in other words.
That Rava is taught, when is Rava saying that it's kosher if part of it is peeled? When is the Mishnah saying it's possible to peel it? I don't know. Whoever that is asking a question, and by all means ask, but otherwise please mute yourself. So the vote is like this. If only part of it is peeled, then it's not going to deteriorate so much. Yeah, some part of it will turn a little brown maybe, but the whole thing won't deteriorate. As opposed to if the whole thing is peeled, then just like an animal that has all its skin gone is never going to recover from that. So also an esrog where all of the outer peel was removed is never going to recover from that. It's just going to go bad. Right. No, you don't. That's the thing. That's the other thing it talks about in Shulchan Aruch. If the part that's peeled starts turning other colors, then it has the din of chazazis that we talked about yesterday, which is that if either it covers most of the esrog or if it's in two or three different places, then the esrog is going to be fine anyway on those grounds. So what we're talking about is that you peeled it carefully enough that it still has the same color, it still has the same uniform color. No, you peeled off like the very outer layer of the zest. Okay. And the Mishnah continued, Nistak Nikav, that if the esrog was, if the esrog was split, or if it developed a hole. So, Tani Ola Bachanina, Nikav Netav Mefulosh Vamashu, if it has a hole all the way through, then the shear of a hole that would make it possible would be no matter what the size of it is. Ellie, if that's you, would you mind muting your phone? It's very hard to hear. Okay. But she'enim are foolish, and if the hole does not go all the way through bika iser, then the minimum size for it to make the esrog possible would be if it's the size of an iser. An iser is a coin that they had in those days. It's in various places in halacha it says that the diameter of it is about 1/3 of a tefach. So we're talking it's a coin about 1 inch across, so roughly the size of a quarter. Then. And it's possible, but if it's enim foolish, for example, Rashi says you took, let's say, a big thick peg and pounded it into the esrog. So nothing is actually missing from the esrog; it's just dented. You just have a big round dent in it. So it only becomes possible according to that if the dent is the size of an iser or larger.
If there's a hole going through the whole thing, then
it's possible, no matter what the size of the hole. Now, what do we mean by all the way through, by the way? There are different Rishonim that discuss the issue. When we say all the way through, do we mean literally from one side of the esrog to the other, like this? Or do we mean even, is it considered all the way through if it just goes through the white part of the esrog? If it goes, for example, you know, so again, you know, we talked about yesterday that you have the inner, you know, the inner part of the esrog where the seeds are. Does the hole actually have to go all the way through the white and the seed area and the other side, or just through the white, like if you do it on off on one side, or even some of them bring up the possibility, again, because we're comparing an esrog to Hilchos Chafers. In Hilchos Chafers, in many cases, we say that if an organ in the animal's body has a hole from the inside to the outside of the organ, through the wall of it, then already it becomes possible. It doesn't have to be all the way through from one end to the other. For example, the heart, the food pipe, the various stomachs we talked about the other day. If there's a hole, if there's even a tiny hole in them that goes from the inside all the way to the outside, then already it's possible. So on those grounds, then we would say if we apply that to the esrog, if you have a hole that goes all the way through the white on one side, all the way into the seed area, all the way into the fruit of the esrog, the fruit part of the esrog, that already would make it possible.
As opposed to
that it actually has to come in and out of the esrog, basically. So it would be, in other words, if this is here, we have diagrams actually in the back of the Gemara. So if this is the esrog over here. If we look at a cross section of the esrog, what we're saying is that some mafarshim say that a hole all the way through literally means all the way through from one end to the other. Others say it could just be through the white, so even like off on a side. And others say even if it's only through the white until the seed, that's already considered that it's possible. Now, Rava asked a question. What happens if the esrog developed simonim that are equivalent to a treifa animal? Then what would be the din? Rava says, what kind of case are we talking about? Ma'ikam abayalai. In Niklas, if you're talking about the case where the esrog was peeled, tanena, well, the Mishnah said that an esrog that was peeled is possible. That's the equivalent of an animal losing its skin, which is one of the major categories of treifas. In Nistak, if you're talking about the case where the esrog cracks, also tonight, which can be a case of treifas in an animal. You can have a case, for example, where an animal's windpipe is cracked along the length of it, where the halacha is actually that if it's cracked the full length, then the animal is treif. If there's an uncracked area at the top and the bottom of the windpipe, though, then the animal is still kosher. The reason is, we're talking about it's cracked along the length. Why? Because when the animal stretches its neck, the crack will close up, right? And then that way, once at times it's able to close up, then eventually it'll be able to heal. As opposed to if it's cracked the entire length, then the animal's safe. Similarly over here, when it comes to the Mishnah says that an esrog that's cracked is possible. And actually some of Foshim say in that case the same logic applies. And this is brought in Shulchan Aruch, that if the esrog is actually cracked literally from top to bottom, there's no whole area of esrog anywhere from top to bottom, then it's possible. Whereas if there's a little whole area on the top and a little whole area on the bottom, for example, or in the middle or something, then it's okay. Other Rishonim disagree with that. They say the difference is, in the case of a windpipe, it'll eventually heal. In the case of a cracked esrog, it's never going to heal. Be that as it may, we do see that there's a similarity between Hilchos Treifas and Hilchos Esrog, that they're the same kind of thing. A cracked windpipe makes the animal treif, and a cracked esrog is possible.
What's the halacha?
Halacha is that, practically speaking, I mean, you know, nowadays we usually get enough esrogim around that we don't need to worry about these kinds of things. But the actual halacha is that preferably you should at least have that there's a little hole area on the top and the bottom, and that'll still be okay. But if all you can find is one that's cracked or literally, Inik of Tanena, and if you're talking about many different treifas, again, have to do with organs that have a hole in them. Also, the Mishnah talks about that if the esrog has a hole, we just said if the hole goes all the way through, doesn't go all the way through, whatever. So what are you asking about? No, the esrog simone treifa. What kind of simone treifa do you have that we haven't already covered? The answer is ki kamibayle kidu'ula. The question that Rava has is like what Ula says. The kidu'ula amar Rabbi Yechanan. Like Ula said in the name of Rabbi Yechanan. Here's a case of treifas. Reish nishpacha kakita in kshera. A lung that pours out like a jug is kosher. Namely, a lung, the lung of an animal, I think we have a pictures of it over here. The lung of an animal, or of a person for that matter, you have there's the various branches in it that branch into smaller and smaller things. That's where the air that's where when you breathe in, that's where the air, that's where your blood gets oxygenated. around it there's a lot of lung tissue. And the whole thing is kind of inside, it inside like a covering, an outer layer, or two outer layers actually. The pleura, yeah. So it is possible for the tissue of the rhea of the lung to become liquefied. It's basically the person or the animal, whatever, becomes like, yeah, I guess it's some kind of infection or something, where the lung tissue becomes like liquid. So the pleura, the outer layers, are still intact. As we're going to say in a second, in order for the animal to be kosher, the bronchi, the branches over there, have to also still be intact. But the flesh of the rhea itself has become like water, has become liquid. So that's the question. We're saying that in the case of a lung, that's good. But Amar Rava, v'hudekaima simponoha, that is only when would the lungs stay kosher if the simponus are still intact. The simponus are the bronchi, the branches. The branches, you know, you have the windpipe, the windpipe divides into, you have two main branches of it, one to each lung, and then they divide into smaller and smaller branches that go throughout the whole lung. What we're saying is that those branches have to still be intact, those tubes. Otherwise, if those have started to liquefy, then already that's it. You know, the animal's a goner. But if the outer layer of the pleura of the lung is still okay, and so are the simponus, and only the flesh in between is liquefied, fine, eventually it'll heal. Therefore, it's not trefa. Holekaim is simponah trefa. So if the simponus are not intact, then it's trefa. So now the question is, hachamai, what do we say over here in the case of an etrog? Do we apply the same kind of thing? What would be the equivalent of the simponus in an etrog? The equivalent would be the inside, the area with the seeds. So you could have, again, a case
of the bronchi.
Simponus of the bronchi. So in terms of an etrog, in other words, what we're saying, the bronchi are the main part of the lung. Similarly, in an etrog, the seeds are the main part of the etrog. So therefore, again, we'd be talking about a case where the outer peel of the etrog is still intact. The inner part with the seeds is also still intact. Let's say, for example, how would you be able to tell that? Mepharshim say, you know, one possibility is you feel it. You know, imagine like you have an overripe avocado or something, you know, it's squishy, but you can feel there's a pit inside. Similar idea. Whatever it is, exactly. So then that's the question. Do we say that the same thing? Do we say, Dilma Hasamahu Dele Shalat Ba Avira Hadabari? Do we say over there, because it's a lung, it's deep inside the body, outside air is not going to get to it? You know, well, it does, obviously, air gets there, it's the lung, but in other words, the air, by the time it reaches the lung, has been filtered. So, therefore, hader bari. Therefore, the lung is going to be able to recover from this sickness, from this infection, whatever it is. That the air does not penetrate to there.
That's in the
air. In the lung. In the lung. A person breathes, or the animal breathes, but what we're saying is the air that reaches the lungs, the air that reaches this diseased area of the lungs, is not just the plain old outside air, which is full of bacteria and everything. By the time it reaches the lungs, it's been filtered. Otherwise we'd all be dead, right? So then that's the question. Hader bari. So there, you might say, you know why the lung is kosher in that case, why the animal is kosher? Because after all, it will end up recovering. As long as the bronchi and the outer layer of the lung are still in good shape. Yeah. Because the air does not have control over it. Hader bari, so therefore it'll eventually recover. But here the esrog is exposed to the outside air. Therefore, saruchi masracha. So if the flesh of the esrog, again meaning the thick white peel inside the shell of the esrog, has gone bad, then eventually saruchi masracha. The whole thing is gonna go bad.
In other words, if it stays sealed from the outside air,
then eventually, yeah.
And if it doesn't seal from the outside,
that's right,
air.
That's what we're saying. So an estrogen is not sealed from the outside air. A lung effectively is, because for air to reach the lungs, it gets filtered through your nose and through your, you know.
We're talking about the lung being punctured.
No, we're not talking about the lung being punctured. We're talking about the lung being liquefied. We're talking about the pleura, the outer layer of the lung is still intact, and the bronchi, the branches that actually where the air passes through, are intact, but the actual flesh of the lung has become liquid. Yeah. So we're saying eventually that may recover, but in the case of an estrog, maybe not. If the estrog is spoiled to the extent that the whole inside of the estrog, well, not the whole inside, the seeds are still intact, fine, but we're saying the whole middle part of the estrog is liquefied, maybe already that's it, you know, it's a goner. So ruchi masrachas, it's gonna end up spoiling completely. Maybe not. So that's Rava's question. Here's an example of Hilchos Trefes. Do we apply it to the estrog or not? Toshma, come, let's hear a braisa that says, Esrog tefuach, an esrog which is tefuach. Now, the usual meaning of tefuach means swelled up, and means not only swelled up, it means decayed. We're going to talk about soon what that means. Or saruach, which also saruach means like smelly, siruchon, yeah. Kavush, or that was pickled. For example, Rashi says you put the esrog into vinegar, let's say, so it becomes possible. Shaluk, or if it was cooked. Kushi, a black esrog, we'll talk about that soon. Lavan, a white esrog. Or menumar, or one that's spotted with different colors. All of those are possible. Continues the Braisa. Esrog kikadru possible. An esrog which is like a ball, meaning round, like the shape of an orange, is possible. The reason that most mefarshim say is because it doesn't have the shape of an esrog. No, an esrog is supposed to have a certain. We'll get to it in a minute. An esrog is supposed to have a certain basic shape. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of variety among the different esrogim, but they all have a certain vague. A vaguely similar shape, yeah, more or less triangular shape. So if you have now an esrog which is round, it doesn't have the shape of an esrog at all. The yesh oimim afatiyim, and some say also a Siamese twin esrog is possible, meaning exactly what it sounds like, that you have two conjoined esrogim. According to that opinion, it's possible. The halacha, by the way, is not like that. The halacha is if you actually have something like that, a Siamese twin esrog, you actually can use it. Esrog ha-boiser, an unripe esrog, unripe meaning actually Rashi says, usually the word boiser means like the first stage of a fruit developing. So Rashi actually says that it means when the esrog is only the size of a small bean. Tosfos argues on that. We had a machlokas in the Mishnah about the minimum size of an esrog, either the size of a walnut or the size of an egg. How is the braisa all of a sudden coming and saying the size of a small bean? That anybody could say that it's kosher. So therefore, no, Tosfos says that boiser just means that it's unripe. It means it's at a very early stage of its development, but still it's reached one of the minimum sizes that it says in the Mishnah. So such an esrog, Rabbi Akiva points of a chum machshirin. Rabbi Akiva says it's possible, the chum says it's kosher. Another case, gidloi betfus, if you raised an esrog inside a mold. You know how you sometimes see these bottles of liqueur with a pear or something inside them? They put the bottle over the pear bud when it's first starting to grow, and it grows inside the bottle. You do a similar thing over here with an esrog. You create a shape of some kind and put it over the esrog so it grows and conforms to that shape. And you made the esrog shape like some other kind of creature, in other words, it doesn't have a normal esrog shape. Then it's puzzle. So what was the point? Katani mias, tafuach saruach. Now, the Braisa had mentioned, the first two cases in the Braisa were tafuach, which we assume means that not only it's swelled up, but also that it's spoiled, and saruach, meaning that it's smelly. My lab, doesn't that mean tafuach mibachut, that tafuach means it's swelled up on the outside, the saruach mibifnim, and saruach would mean that it's decayed on the inside. So that would answer our question. What the whole case we were talking about is where the inside of the esrog is decayed, it has become liquefied. So therefore, and we see the Braisa says that's possible, so that would answer the question. The answer is loy, not necessarily. Aidiv aidim vachutz, both tafuach and saruach might be referring to the outside of the esrog. V'loy kasha, it wouldn't be such a kasha. Had tafach afagab le sarach, because one case could be where it's swelled up, even though it's not decayed. For example, Rashi says the esrog got wet, and, you know, as some fruits do when they get wet and you don't dry them off afterwards, and they start swelling up. Even though afagavulei sarach, even though it didn't actually start smelling bad, or the other possibility is hard to sarach afagavulei tafach. The other case would be where it smells bad, but it didn't actually swell up. Why would it smell bad if it didn't swell up? Rashi gives an example. For example, if worms are eating it, so they can make it smelly even though it's not swelling up. The point is, therefore, so we have no proof from this braisa that we're talking about anything on the inside of the esrog. It could be that all the different things we're talking about refer to the outside of the esrog. So Lamai says it's left unsolved. Most poskim say that. So most of the poskim say, therefore, that we have to go lechumra, and you can't use an esrog where it's liquefied on the inside. So in other words, if it feels squishy like that. There's some of them who say that since most of these things we're talking about of hadar are only midrabanan during the rest of the days of Sukkot, then you can in a pinch be yotze with it. Going through the continuation of the price, so Amamar, Esrog Kushi Possel, we said that a Kushi Esrog, a black Esrog, is Possel. And actually, not just the Braisa, the Mishnah had said that Esrog HaKushi is possible. You might ask about Tanya Kushi Kosher, but there's a Braisa that says a Kushi Esrog is kosher, Doimel a Kushi possible, but an Esrog that's like a Kushi is possible. Abai says that's exactly it. Kitnan Nami Masnissin. That's what our Mishnah means. When our Mishnah says Esrog HaKushi, it doesn't literally mean a Kushi, it means Doimel a Kushi. It means one that's similar to a Kushi. What is Kushi? What's similar to a Kushi? I'll tell you in a second. Rava Amalai Kasha Halon V'Halahu. It's not a problem. One is talking about for us in Bavel, the other for the Jews in Eretz Yisrael. Now, what are we talking about over here? Rashi says like this. You have Esrogim that grow... Rashi says like this. Esrogim that grow in Kush tend to become black. The same way as the people who live there are dark-skinned from the, you know, because of the extra sunlight. So also, the Esrogim that grow there tend to become dark. So therefore, what we're saying is like this. An Esrog that actually comes from the land of Kush would be kosher, because that's, of course, so Abaya is saying, if it's actually Kushi, if it actually literally comes from Kush and is black, then fine, it's kosher, because that's the way Esrogim normally grow there. If it's Doimel Kushi, if it grows someplace else but becomes black, then it's possible, because that's not the normal thing for it to grow over there. So that's according to Abaya. And then Rava says, no, the difference is that in Bavel is geographically closer to Kush. So therefore, in Bavel, they're more used to seeing Kushi Esrogim. And Yisrael is further away, so therefore an Esrog Kushi would be possible. Now, what do we mean by that? So if we say, usually we say that Kush is Ethiopia, so then, yeah, how is Bavel closer to Ethiopia than Yisrael? If anything, it's the other way around. So in the notes in the Art School Gemara, they were talking about maybe caravan routes or whatever, but other people say much more simply, Kush in Gemara terminology a lot of times does not mean Ethiopia. A lot of times it means an area near India. You know, we talk about, you know, Achashverosh HaMoylech Mahodu Vad Kush. The Gemara mentions in Megillah there's actually Machloikas. Are Hoidu and Kush next to each other, or are they on opposite ends of the known world of that time? If they're opposite ends of the known world, then yeah, Hoidu is India, Kush is Ethiopia. If you say they're next to each other, then Kush is also an area next to India. There's a bunch of mountains, there's a mountain range in Afghanistan or Pakistan or something like that that's called the Hindu Kush. So then could be. So Kush could mean that. So then in that case, Babel is indeed closer to that than Eretz Yisrael is. No, so then the Gemara says in Megillah that according to, if you say that Hodu and Kush are next to each other, it means just as easy as it is to rule over Hodu and Kush, which are next to each other, that's how easily Achashverosh ruled over the whole world.
Yeah. And there's also a few other examples,
Yops,
that mentioned are similar to
Yops. Yeah, there's another similar thing. The Gemara mentions it in the same Gemara, yeah.
Why just a bunch of people say that
So that's the other explanation, is that many, that other Rishonim say, is that what it means, that Kushi means an Esrog that is blackish, but not actually solid black, and Doimel Kushi means that one that's actually like a person from Kush, like an Ethiopian, like an African, dark-skinned. So therefore, in other words, an Esrog that's just darkish is okay, but one that's really, really dark would be possible. And then according to Abaya, and then according to Rava, what we're saying is in Bavel they're used to having darkish Esrog. Even in Eretz Yisrael they're not. So therefore in Bavel even a darkish Esrog is kosher. In Eretz Yisrael even a darkish Esrog would be possible, because they're not used to that kind of thing. It's not considered harder for them. The interesting vote Sam Sofer says on this, Alderach Hadrush, he says, we find in a number of places that a tzaddik is called a Kushi. By Moshe Rabbeinu with Tzipora, for example, he is a Kushis Lakoff. She's called a Kushis because she's distinguished for her might and tovim. So a Kushi, therefore, represents, according to the Chassam Sofer says, represents a person that Todosayim Nase, represents a person who does like Reb Shimon Ben Yochai. He holds you don't have to work for a living. Malachta Nafasai De'Achayim. The Gemara says in Brachos that some people did like Rabbi Shimon Ben Yochai, and they weren't successful. The normal thing a person should do is like Rabbi Shmuel. You set aside, there's time for working and there's time for learning. So therefore, he says like this. The Kushi, the person who's actually on that level to be able to be Torah Seyum Nasa, then good. then fine, he's kosher. Doima lakushi, but somebody who's not on that level but acts in that way is not so kosher. Then he should do like Rabbi Shmuel's opinion, not like Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai. And then he adds, what's the difference between halon v'halavu, Eretz Yisrael versus anywhere else? He says because in Eretz Yisrael, even in Eretz Yisrael, I guess this is negeya to what they've been to what's been going on the last few days in the news. In Eretz Yisrael, he says a person should actually not be even 100% of the time like Rav Shimon ben Yochai only learning Torah because you have a mitzvah to cultivate Eretz Yisrael and be able to do the mitzvahs. That's Luyas Varetz. Give truma, give meiser, etc. Whereas in Chutz La'aretz, you don't have those mitzvahs anyway. So by all means, be a kushi. Be an etzrig kushi over there and focus only on learning.
Where do we take it that kushi?
Because we say that just like a kushi is noticeable for his skin color, so a tzaddik is noticeable for his meisim type.
So we're saying that there's a little bit of time for work and spiritual rest for Torah?
Well, that's how it should be anyway. You work only as much as you need to for Parnassah. But the Chassam Sofer's point is if you're in Eretz Yisrael, you have to set aside some time for farming because you have to keep the mitzvah Saployis Baretz. You have to have grain or produce or whatever that you can take Trumas and Nisus from and do the other mitzvahs that depend on Eretz Yisrael. Whereas if you're anywhere else in the world, if you're on the level to be Taka like Rav Shimon ben Yochai and be Teradasei Ibnasei, then by all means do that. But don't be a doima lakushi. Don't be somebody who pretends to be on that level when really you're not.
There's jobs.
Some cipher says it. Yeah. In his Jerusalem or something, or his Purushim on Soka, yeah. What?
The way that people can, in a way, because when they're doing a job.
Right. Continues the Braisa. Esrog Aboisa, we said that an unripe Esrog, Rabbi Kiva Poisa of a Chamachshin, Omar Rabbah, so Rabbah points out, Rabbi Kiva, Rabbi Shimon, Amru Dover Echad, Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Shimon effectively are saying the same thing. Rabbi Kiva Hodamor, and Rabbi Kiva is saying, like we just said, that a very unripe Esrog is still kosher to use. Rabbi Shimon Maihi, where do we see Rabbi Shimon's opinion? The Tanya, or actually the Tanan. Rabbi Shimon Poter as Esrogim Bekotnan. Rabbi Shimon says that Esrogim, when they're still small, are Poter from Meiser. So Rabbi Kiva is saying that an Esrog that's small is possible. Similarly, Rabbi Shimon is saying that an Esrog that's small is Poter from Meiser. So we see they seem to be saying the same thing. Amalei Abaya, Duma Lohi. Abaya says, why? Not necessarily. Ad kam lekam Rabbi Kiva hachad in hader v'leka. Why is Rabbi Kiva saying here that small Esrog is possible? Because not hader. It has to be Priyat Hadar. Aval Hasim could have been in Svirale, but in that case over there, maybe Rabbi Akiva would agree with the Chamim that even a small Esrog is Chayiv and Nicer.
Even though it's not,
because there, Hadar is not an issue. Or, vice versa, Inami, Ad Kan, like to Omer, Rabbi Shimon Hasim, Eldachiv, after to Aser, is called Tvur Saracha. Maybe over there, Rabbi Shimon says specifically that a small Esrog is possible, an unripe Esrog is possible, because what does the Pasuk say? It says you should take Meiser from all the produce of your seed, Zarecha, of your seed, meaning Kederach Shabne Adam, Meitzi, and Lizure. It has to be the size that people would normally take out to plant. An unripe Esrog, the seeds of it are not going to grow. So therefore, nobody's going to take a tiny little asterisk like that and then plant it. Aval Hacha could have been on but over here, maybe Rabbi Shimon would hold like a Chachamim that you can use a small asterisk because here it's not an issue.
Because we're not talking about
planting it. But Tulei Midi, and the Gemara says that's it. There's nothing further to that. Forget about it. Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Shimon do not necessarily hold like each other. And the Mishnah had said, not the Mishnah, the Braisa had said, Gidlei b'tfus, if you put the Esrog inside a frame as it's growing, v'asoi k'min v'yacheres, and he made it like the shape of some other entity, possible. Amar Rava l'shanu v'l'k'min v'yacheres. That would only be, Taka, if you made it like another entity, if you made it like a completely non-Esrog shape. Avo k'bir yosei kosher, but if you made it a regular Esrog shape, then it would be kosher.
Even if it's in a mold.
Even if it's in a mold. And last pshita, well, of course, k'min v'yacheres tzanya. The Braisa had said, if it's a different shape, so obviously if it's the same shape, it's kosher. The answer is, l'tzricha d'avida d'api d'api. What Rava is talking about, the reason why Rava has to tell us is, or not Rava, yeah, Rava, is because suppose you made it, suppose d'api d'api literally means like boards. So Rashi says it means you made it like a water wheel. A water wheel is, you have, you know, there's a round thing in the middle. You have a bunch of boards sticking out from the sides, like spokes. So what if you made a form like that? You know, it's shaped like that, like a flower, kind of. and you put the esrog inside there. So it comes out, when it comes in, it comes out more or less a normal esrog shape, but it's got like deep grooves running along the sides of it. The chiddush is that that's still okay because that's basically an esrog shape.
Put the esrog on boards.
Not on boards. Not on boards. You made a shape. You made a shape like a water wheel, and put the esrog inside it. Here. So it comes out. That comes out a more or less normal shape esrog, but it's got like deep grooves running along the sides of it. Or there's a different. Rabbi Hananel has a different explanation that dapi means like one board means that you made it like flat, like flat with corners. But it still has a recognizably esrog shape. It's still got, there's a top and the bottom. Yeah, and it's still kosher. Itmar, they said, ik esrog shenikvu achbarim. What if you have an esrog that holes were made in it by mice? The mice came and gnawed on the esrog. Are you allowed to use it? Amar Rav ain't the hoder. So Rav says, that's not considered hoder. You can't use it. Or at least you can't use it on the first day. We talked about earlier in the Masechta, is hoder, do you need hoder the other day? Just so this. What do you mean? Any? How could he say that? Well, we find that Rav Chanina dipped his esrog into a sauce, because that's what they used to do with their food in those days, and ate from it, and then was yotze in it. So we see that even though there's something missing from the esrog, it's still kosher.
Kosher, but who said it's kosher? It's
hodder. No, but he's saying ain't means you can't use it the first day, but and maybe not even the other days, but we see Rav Chanina used it, and the pashtus even the first day.
As an estrog,
even though he ate some of it. So.
Sorry, everything they ate.
What? Yeah, they used to be makpil everything they ate. So the Gemara points out, okay, a little chanina kasha masnissin. Okay, well then forget about the business about mice. Rav Chanina, we would have a question from our Mishnah. Our Mishnah itself said that if an estrog is missing anything, then it's possible, and here Rav Chanina used it. That's the answer. Like Kasha, Lerav Chanina, like Kasha. So the Gemara says, Bishleim is Lerav Chanina, like Kasha. So actually, we can say good. According to Lerav Chanina, the Mishnah is not such a question. Can be Yom Tov Rishon, can be Yom Tov Sheni, because one's talking about on the first day of Yom Tov, and the other is on the other days of Yom Tov. On the first day of Yom Tov, where you have to take it Minat Torah, then you have to have a Lekach Tem, that there should be Lekicha Tama, it should be complete taking. So it has to be a complete Esrog. The rest of the day, it's only the Rabbanon anyway, so therefore when we're saying that Rav Chanina used it, he used it the other days, maybe not the first day. Elo Rav Kasha, but according to Rav, you're saying it's not Hodor, you need Hodor the rest of Sukkot also, according to Rashi anyway. So then how would that work if it's not Hodor when it's bitten into? Amalok Rav, so Rav can answer you, Shani Achborim Dimi Isi. It's different if mice bit into it, because then it becomes disgusting. But a person biting into it does not make it so disgusting. Ikadamri, a different version. Amar Rav Zehoder. A different version is Faket. Rav said it is Hoder if mice ate from it. And we can prove that. Because we see that Rav Chanina used to eat from his esrog and then be yotze with it. And then the question is, will Rav Chanina kasha masnissin? Again, what would you do with the Mishnah according to Rav Chanina, that if an esrog is chaser, it's possible? And again, the answer is, well, kasha can be Yom Tov Rishon, can be Yom Tov Sheni. One's talking about the first day of Yom Tov, one's talking about the other days of Yom Tov. And again, when Rav says it's hodder, good, that means you're able to use it the other days of Sukkot. You just can't use it the first day because it's chaser, but you can use it the other days. The Aruch Oner asks an obvious question, why did Rav Chanina eat from his esrog anyway?
Right.
And he answers that probably what happened was that Rav Chanina 1 year only had an esrog. He didn't have the other three minim, so he figured he's not going to be able to be yotze anyway. He has an esrog, he might as well eat it. And then someone brought him the other three minim. So now he has a partially eaten esrog, and then somebody brought him the other minim, so now he can actually do the mitzvah.
And
he
had to get to us at the
Apparently not, I don't know. Mefarshim also have a bit of a time with, in general, we're going to learn in the next perek that the esrog is mukhtza for all of Sukkot. Once the esrog is set aside for the mitzvah, you're not allowed to eat it. So how is he allowed to eat it anyway? So according to the Aruch Haner, it works out nicely. He never set it aside for the mitzvah anyway. According to everybody else who doesn't have that, they would have to say, Tosfos talks about it in the next perek, that, for example, you could have the case where he set aside a different esrog for each day of Sukkot. So then the halacha is you're allowed to use it one day and eat it the next day, or vice versa. Each one, the one, let's say, that he set aside for the third day of Sukkot, he's allowed to eat from it on the second day. It hasn't been used for the mitzvah yet. Then the Mishnah said esrog cotton chula, that a small esrog, that was machlokes, what the minimum size is for an esrog, the size of a walnut or the size of an egg. Amar Ratram Bapapa, kamachlokes kan, kach machlokes ba'avonim mekorzolos. The same machlokes that we have here is the same machlokes that is by avonim mekorzolos. Rashi says Mekorzolos means sharpened. because we're talking about that these are stones that you're going to use for wiping. They didn't have toilet paper in those days. They used stones. We learned about this at Shabbos. So Rashi says we're talking about that they have a little bit of a sharp end so that they actually do the job. Tosfos says not. Tosfos brings based on some other Gemara that that's not what Makor Zolos means. Tosfos says that it means soft. They have to be soft enough that, you know, they won't hurt you when you're using them. Whatever it is, the same kind of machlokas we have about the size of the esrog, the same way you have about those kinds of stones. Zetanya, the Shabbos, on Shabbos, Gimel Avonim Makor Zolos, Mutal Hachnas Leves HaKise. You're allowed to bring three such stones into a bathroom. So it actually says we're talking about a bathroom over here, which is in the field. There's no walls around it. So you were talking about an acamelus, in other words. Usually you would not be allowed to carry in there, but because of covered abrius, the rabbanon allowed you to carry these three stones over there. Tosfos argues, and Tosfos says that actually we're talking about an area that does have walls around it, but what you're still talking about, for example, taking the stones from acamelus into but you're still not supposed to carry in it, midrabbanon. So here we're talking about, for example, carrying from a caramelist from the field into this bathroom area, which is surrounded with walls, which is a Rosh Yachid. Again, normally midrabbanon that would be also here that Rabbanon allowed it because of covered abrius. And Tosfos says all this would only apply by a temporary bathroom. It doesn't apply if you have a place set aside for a bathroom like we do nowadays. There's no such heter. You should have prepared toilet paper there before Shabbos. The Kamashiur, and what's the size of these stones that you can bring in? Rabbi Meir says the size of a walnut. Rabbi Yehuda says the size of an egg, which are the same measurements that they said in our Mishnah. So Rashi says, very simple. There's nothing to do. The Machlokes have nothing to do with each other. But it helps you remember that Rabbi Meir says the same thing in both places, that in both places he says a walnut. And Rabbi Yehuda in both places says the size of an egg. Over Godo Kadesh, we said the largest possible esrog according to Rabbi Yehuda is where two of them will fit in your hand, and then Rabbi Yossi said it doesn't matter even if it's so big that you have to hold the one esrog in both hands. So Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Amar Rabbi Yossi, Ma'aseh Rabbi Akiva Shabala Beisik Nesis Esrog Yal Ksefa. It once happened that Rabbi Akiva came to shore with an esrog on his shoulder. No, I'm talking about on Yom Tov, but in other words, it was so big you have to carry it on his shoulder. So obviously you're allowed to use a very big esrog. Rabbi Yehuda answers back to him, Misham Raya, you bring a proof from there. Afheim Amrullah, in fact, the Chachamim told him, Ain't Hadar, this is not considered Hadar. Which, actually, we learned before in the Perek that Rabbi Yehuda himself holds that you don't have to have Hadar, we said in the end. So Mepharshim say, what Rabbi Yehuda is saying is, I hold you don't need Hadar, B'chlal. But even according to the opinions that you need Hadar, this isn't Hadar. Because he said that Hadar means it's something else. It teaches us how to be Ilana Mashana Lashana or Idur or all the different motives that we had. Yeah.
We're not talking about
Idur. We're talking about Tashas. I don't know, but Rabbi Yehuda had the reason why Rabbi Yehuda had said you need to be able to fit two Esrogim in one hand is like we said the other day, so that you can switch them without dropping the Esrog. So it's a practical matter. So in other words, according to Rabbi Yehuda, There is a maximum size for the esrog with a practical consideration. He doesn't hold of hadar. He doesn't hold that the esrog has to be hadar. But the chachamim, he says, the chachamim told Rabbi Akiva, if you hold that there is such a thing as hadar, then you should know an esrog that size is not hadar. Whereas Rabbi Yossi doesn't agree with that. Mishnah says, Ein oigdin es halulav ela b'mino, you can only bind the lulav with its species. So, for example, you know, something for a lulav leaves or something from the hadas plant or whatever. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Meir says, no, you can even use a string, you can even use a rope, you can use whatever you want. Amar Rabbi Meir, so Rabbi Meir says, I can prove to you. Ma'aseh ba'anshei Yerushalayim show you oigdin es halulav ein b'gemoni es halzav. It happened with the people of Yerushalayim. They used to bind their lulavim with golden strings. Amrullah, so you see, you don't need the same min. Amrullah, they answered him, no, the min of Hayo Ogdenosimamata. They did bind it with the same min underneath. They used lulav leaves underneath. They just then, they wrapped a golden cord around it to make it look nice for Hidur Mitzvah. But the actual binding itself was done with lulav leaves or what have you.
And that was just decoration?
Yeah, basically. So the Gemara says, Amar, we'll just learn a couple of lines of the Gemara. Amar Rabba, afilo b'siv, afilo b'ikr d'dikla. When we're saying that you have to use the same min for binding them, it doesn't necessarily mean you have to use dafka, the minim that are actually used in the talad minim, like, for example, lulav leaves or hadas branches or what have you. It means you can even use siv, which is a kind of vine that grows around the bottom of a palm tree, afilo b'ikr d'dikla, or you can even use a piece of bark from the trunk of the tree. In other words, as long as it comes from that actual tree, then it's fine. V'amar Rava, and Rava says, my time is Rabbi Yehuda. What's Rabbi Yehuda's reason that he says you need to use Davka, one of the four minim? Because Kasava Lulav Tzarech Eged, Rabbi Yehuda holds, as we said a few times, that the Lulav necessarily has to be bound. If you don't bind it, you're not Yotze the Mitzvah. The Imaisi Minachrina, so therefore if you bring in another species, have a Chamisha Mini, then you have five Minim, and that would be Baal Tosef, if you're adding to the Mitzvah. So therefore we see, whereas Rav Meir doesn't have, doesn't have a problem with that, Rav Meir holds, and this is Halacha, that Lulav Ein Tzarech Eged, the Minim do not have to be bound, so therefore the binding is not considered an added thing to the Mitzvah.
We still bind them
as a hidur. As we said the other day, even the Chachamim agree that it's a hidur mitzvah to do that. It's still noy mitzvah. It still beautifies the mitzvah to do it. But because it's not necessary in order to fulfill the mitzvah, therefore you can use whatever you want for the binding. And practically speaking, we use lulav leaves anyway, but yeah.
We said that we take three hadassim. What about if you add to the three hadassim?
So, that's not adding to the mitzvah. That's not adding. According to most poskim, according to most rishonim, that's not adding to the mitzvah because you're just adding of the same species. And you're beautifying the mitzvah by that, that's fine. If you were to add another species, though, that would be an issue.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fine.